this part of the house that I've got to do?
All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So this week we find ourselves in Parshas Tetzaveh. Our shiur tonight is sponsored by Chana and Avram Goldman in memory of the first yard site of Eliezer Krumbine, Eliezer ben Yaakov Zelig, from the Bracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah. So after remark, these parshios, if you're a detail-oriented person, then these parshios are for you. Because between Truma and Tetzaveh, and then again Vayakhel and Pekudei, the Torah spares no detail in discussing. At first in last week's parasha, we saw the various intricate details concerning the construction of the Mishkan. And of course, in this week's parasha, Parshas Tetzaveh, the Torah spent a significant amount of time speaking about the Big Day Kohuna, about the various specific Kohanic garments, and really, again, describing in great detail all the care and all the concern that literally went into each thread. When I see each thread, there's no exaggeration in that. You know, when Rashi points out in the Pesukim, the number of threads that went into each thread, if that makes sense. I guess it's maybe better to say the number of strands that were intertwined into each thread. And for some of the Big Day Kohuna, there were 24 strands of independent fibers to make up one thread of wool, one thread of material. So but I'm not going to focus on any of that. We're not going to focus on the Mishkan from last week. We're not going to focus on the Big Day Kohuna of this week. Instead, what I want to show you is something that appears at the beginning of the parasha that seems to be totally out of place. Take a look at number one. Torah begins, parasha begins. Va'ata titzaveh es b'nei Yisrael. You shall command the Jewish people. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's speaking to Moshe. V'yikhu elecha shemen zayis zoch. Kasis lama'or laha'alos ner tamid. And you shall have them bring clear olive oil, shemen zayis zoch. Just so you understand, if you've ever researched the making of olive oil. So, you know, even today, you can go to the supermarket and you could buy olive oil, and you could buy extra virgin olive oil. So let's do some extra virgin olive oil and a regular olive oil. So extra virgin olive oil is actually what the Torah calls shemen zayis zoch. It's the oil that comes out from the first squeezing of the olive. Meaning in the production of olive oil, what they would do is they would make an initial press of the olives. That oil that would come out is what the Torah calls shemen zayis zoch, pure, clear olive oil. And then what they would do is they would leave olives in the press for a longer period of time, and additional oil would come out afterwards. That secondary oil was not as great of quality as the first. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, and tell the Jewish people to bring before you pure olive oil, kasis lama'or, crushed oil, crushed olives for ma'or, to ultimately illuminate, la'alos ner tamid, to keep the lamp burning constantly. In the tent of meeting, outside the parochas, outside the parochas means outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, outside of the Holy of Holies, which is before the testimony. In the Holy of Holies, of course, Kodesh HaKadoshim is the Aaron, is the Ark. Aaron and his sons shall arrange it for the lamp to burn from evening to morning before Hashem. Me'erev ha'boker efnei Hashem, chukas olam l'dorosam. Me'is b'nei Yisrael. This is an everlasting statute for their generations of b'nei Yisrael. And so obviously, what is the Torah describing over here? Olive oil for what purpose? For menorah. Hadlokas neros of the menorah. Now, so again, so Kutzbrok to Moshe, very important to halacha, you can't use any oil to kindle the menorah. It must be shem zayis zoch kasis lamor. Virtually all of the mefarshim ask a basic question, which is that these two psukim are out of place. Where do these two psukim really belong?
Matthew.
They belong in the beginning of Parshas Truma. Because in the beginning of Parshas Truma is where the Torah discusses all of the necessary materials that needed to be donated to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan, to allow for the continued function of the Mishkan. In fact, you look back in Parshas Truma, and the Torah actually does mention shemen. The Torah mentions oil. So many of the commentaries understand that shemen is actually not oil for the menorah, but that's what's called shemen ha-mishcha. Shemen ha-mishcha. Shemen ha-mishcha, we'll see later on when they inaugurate the Mishkan, they smeared oil, anointing oil, over all of the utensils. Even though the Torah is correct. That's the Mefarshim point out. How can you call Shemen HaMishcha Shemen LaMa'or? So that's a different discussion. But many of the Mefarshim understand that Shemen is Shemen HaMishcha, and this Shemen is Shemen for the menorah. But the basic question is, the fundamental question is, why is this here? The Torah should have included the donation of pure olive oil in the beginning of last week's parsha, when it talked about all the other items donated. Why does the Torah seem to put it right here, so out of place, in between a discussion of the utensils of the Mishkan and the big day kahuna of the Kohanic vestments? That's the question we're going to focus on. Very simple question. Very simple question. What is the Shemen doing here at the beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh? And what I'd like to do tonight is share with you five different approaches. Now, these are, see, often when we do multiple approaches, I try to do at the end of the shiur, try to link some of the approaches. We're not linking any of the approaches tonight. They're going to be, I want to present to you five independent ideas. You could do your own homework at your Shabbos table. You could try to link them. I'm not going to attempt to link them because I think the power of these ideas that we're going to discuss is the fact that they are standalone principles. So before we get into the three major ones, let's spend a few moments speaking about two basic approaches. Look at the Rashbam number two. The Rashbam, the grandson of Rashi. So the Rashbam says the following. Va'ato titzave, lemalahu omer daber el b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu li truma lefi sha'a l'tzorech ha-mishkan. So the Rashbam says something very interesting. The Rashbam says that in last week's parasha, when Moshe Rabbeinu made the call, or God commanded Moshe to make the call and to collect all of these materials, interestingly enough, although the Mishkan resembles the Beis HaMikdash in many ways, there are many dramatic differences. So for example, when we go ahead and we build the Beis HaMikdash, so how did we build the Beis HaMikdash? Did people bring, when Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beis HaMikdash, do people bring their tcheles, their blue wool, and their red wool, and do they bring the regular, do people show up with these materials to Shlomo HaMelech's house? No. In fact, what did people donate to the Beis HaMikdash? Money. And the truth is, even now, Shlomo HaMelech taxes the general populace, but there is no gathering of resources. The truth is, which of course makes a lot of sense also, can you imagine a shul starts a building campaign, asks everybody to donate, you know, and the Schwartzes show up with some lumber that they had left over, right? And the Finkelsteins show up with some old curtains. You know, so obviously when you're building a major building, you need money. You don't want people's supplies because you have to build a certain way. So the Rashbam points out a fascinating idea. The Rashbam says that in the Parshas of Truma and Tetzaveh, there are two different collections that are happening. In Parshas Truma was a unique once-in-a-lifetime collection. Moshe Rabbeinu puts out the word, we need all of these materials, and I want everyone to show up with different types of materials. Aval kan, shetzivu yizeh l'chol adoros, lo seis shemen lamor, l'chol shana v'shana, l'kachu omer v'ato titzave. So Rashbam says something very interesting. The Rashbam says, but when it comes, let's say, to the collection of oil, the collection of oil was, in fact, something that was collected from the general populace for many years, for many generations. It was done even in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Shina haloshon, lefi shekol loshon tzava, aladorosi. So the Rashbam makes an interesting textual observation. In last week's parasha, when Moshe Rabbeinu was collecting the materials, what's the loshon, what's the wording that's used? V'yikhuli truma, take from me a donation, take from me a gift. And what is in this week's parasha? V'ato titzave, command the people to bring oil. Why do we command to bring oil and only request other things? Says the Rashbam, we command the people to bring the things that will be their requirements to bring now and in future generations. We only request the things that are unique for this collection, but will not necessarily be needed for future collections. So what comes out according to the Rashbam is something very interesting. Why is Shemen, why is the collection for oil mentioned separately than the collection for other materials in last week's parasha? The Rashbam will say because last week's collection was about the unique once-in-a-lifetime collection for the building, creation, and fabrication of the Mishkan. Therefore, only the items that were going to be needed that one time were mentioned in last week's parasha. What's mentioned in this week's parasha? All of the things that will remain necessities going forward. So, for example, what's in this week's parasha? Only two major things. Number one, shemen, oil. And number two, bigdei kohuna, Kohanic vestments, Kohanic clothing. And interestingly enough, we know, did the utensils change from the Mishkan to the Beis HaMikdash? Did they change?
No.
Definitely. Yeah, it was a death. That was... Right. No, of course they did. Right? So now I'll tell you how we know they changed. Because, again, although, again, the technical meaning, there was a Mizbeach, there were two altars in the Mishkan, two altars in the Beis HaMikdash, but the dimensions were different. Remember, again, the Mishkan was a mobile structure. As such, you cannot create anything all that large because it had to be mobile. The Beis HaMikdash was not. So, you know, again, even just looking by pictures that you find in the Chumashim, you can see the altar of the Mishkan was much smaller than the altar of the Beis HaMikdash. But interestingly enough, the one thing that does not change from Beis HaMikdash, from Mishkan to Beis HaMikdash is, or are, Bigdei Kohuna. The Kohanic garments remained the same. Those never changed. So therefore, approach number one is that Rashbam says the distinction between Truma and Tetzava is Truma contains all of the information that were unique to the Mishkan that were not going to become eternal statutes for the creation and fabrication of the house of God. Parshas Tetzava contains all of the information of the things that are, yes, part of the Mishkan, but will also be part of the Beis HaMikdash in the future. Look at number three. I'm sorry? Oh, so the Ketores is a very good question. Well, It's another shear. The simple answer is that there were distinctions in the Ketores of the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash. That's the simple answer. What they were and where we see that in the text is a much more difficult issue. Take a look at number three. So now we come to our second approach. Second approach is the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni writes, Ve'ato titzada, la'achar shagamar. So again, remember, everybody keep your eye on the ball. We're only dealing with one question tonight, which is why Shemen is in the beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh, and it's not mentioned in the beginning of Parshas Truma with the rest of the collections. Right, the Chizkuni, Ve'ato titzada, la'achar shagamar lomar kol tzivoy malechas ha-mishkan, perish lo, heich yitaknu lo ora. So the Chizkuni says something very interesting. Parshas Truma is all about what? The creation of the structure. So says the Chizkuni, first we speak about the creation of the structure, and then we speak about what? How to illuminate it. That first we speak about the construction of the structure, and then we speak about how to introduce light into the structure. Why does the Torah follow this model? Look what the Chizkuni says. This is so beautiful. V'chein matzinu b'ma'aseh bereishis. La'achar shenivru kol inyanei ha'aretz, tikin lahem ora. So says the Chizkuni, because the construction, or I should say the creation of the Mishkan, is modeled after the creation of the world. This is part of a much larger theme, that the Mishkan was supposed to represent a microcosm of the universe, or at least of the earth. The Mishkan was supposed to be a microcosm of the natural world. So says the Rashbam, following that model, just like when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, what did he do? First it says, Bereishis bara Elokim ha'asah shamayim v'asah aretz. God created the structure of this planet, of this world, and then only afterwards, what does God say? Vayomer Elokim yehi or, vayehi or. So first the structure is created, then light is introduced. So too says the Chizkuni, when creating the Mishkan, first the structure is created, or at least the structure is commanded, and then only afterwards in Parshas Tetzaveh, v'yikhu elecha shemen zayis zach, which is there to fuel the menorah, only after the actual construction of the Mishkan comes the illumination. Two beautiful ideas. Now look at number four. So this is from a sefer Me'o'alei HaTorah, Rav Yaakov Ariel. Rav Yaakov Ariel is the chief rabbi of Ramat Gan. And he writes the following. He has beautiful essays on the parsha. And he writes the following. He raises something that is so obvious when he says it, but I didn't think about it before. Look what he writes. Number 4a. Ki achin ha-menorah, ki abitui ha-holam bi-yoser es-limud ha-Torah. Now remember, each of the utensils of the Mishkan represent different ideas and ideals. So what does the menorah represent? So normally, in the words of Chazal, the menorah represents Torah. Torah, hi ora, right? There's a strong combination. Ner Hashem nishmas Adam. There's a connection between fire, between the soul of man, between Torah. So the menorah represents Torah and the ability for Torah to illuminate. So Rav Ariel writes, Amnam, but there's a problem. What's the problem? Nimtzeis ha-Torah, ba'aron, nimtzeis ha-Torah atzma. Ulam hiyano senes. So Ariel raises an interesting point. He says, but why does the menorah have to represent Torah? After all, there's another utensil that represents Torah, and that is the Aron, the Ark of the Covenant. What does the Ark of the Covenant contain within it? It contains the very luchos, the very tablets. Remember, not just one set of tablets, two sets of tablets, the whole set, the broken set. And remember, according to the Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his life, by the end of his life, has written a complete Sefer Torah. That Torah was also in the Aron. So says Rav Ariel, why do I need a menorah that represents Torah if I have an Aron that represents Torah? And he says something so beautiful. He says, Me'ala kaporis miskala Hashem liyisrael. God reveals himself, remember we spoke about this last week, from between the two kruvim on the top of the little, the Aron, u'mitachtei besoch ha'aron hator shenitna b'Sinai. And contained in the Ark itself is the very Torah that was given at Sinai. Ha'aron mevatei esmatan ha'Torah ha'idei Hashem Moshe v'ad achron nevi'im. Hiskalos ha'elokis b'tzuros ha'ashonos na'asis derech ha'aron. So the Aron contains Torah m'Sinai. The Aron contains the very tablets that Moshe Rabbeinu received from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Aron represents the Mesorah, represents the transmission of Torah directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe, and of course Moshe Rabbeinu down the subsequent line. But skip down a little bit. He says something amazing. He says that Ulam Torah in Orak Han Chasa Shemayim is Ala Aretz Ya'arov Kimatar Lechi HaTorah Hano Chasas Mishamayim Matzmicha Es Aretz. The Torah, of course, is not made just to simply be a body of knowledge, right? Meaning, if the Torah sits in the Ark, that's very nice, but what does it do for us? The idea of Torah is that Torah is supposed to literally bring the world to life. He skipped down a few more lines. Ma'amatz enoshi adir, nidrash kedei lahagos b'Torah, lahavina u'liashma. The job of man, ultimately, is to struggle with Torah, to understand Torah. HaTorah ha'isa b'shamayim, gam lifnei shenitna l'bnei Adam. Look at you guys, the Torah is there not just to remain an inanimate, inactive body of knowledge, but it's there to change us. It's there to forge us. It's there to ultimately form our identity. HaTorah ba'aron hazav. Listen to this beautiful line. If the Torah remains in the golden ark, Lelo limuda v'kiyuma, with no one learning it or upholding it, v'poi de b'nei adam, through man's actions, alula lehafech lemotzag moziani. If the Torah remains in the Ark, it becomes, moziani is a very interesting Hebrew word, right? Museum, right? So if the Torah remains in the Ark and it's not accessed, then it might as well be behind a glass. Because, you know, if you've ever been to different museums, have it, if you've ever seen, they have rescued Sifrei Torah from the Holocaust. And you know, when you see, there's a whole halachic discussion about whether or not you could do that with the Sefer Torah. But leaving that aside, you know, the only thing more tragic than seeing a Sefer Torah that was mistreated by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam B'Zichram, is seeing a Sefer Torah that's housed in a box of glass. Because that's not what Torah is. Torah is not housed in a box of glass. Torah is not put up in display. Torah is used. Torah is learned. Torah is something dynamic and active. It's not there for us to simply look at to from a distance and just leave it there. He says, Chalila, v'lo lakam chus mersam, ki hunha ba'aron kedei sha'anu na'ir es chayenu la'ora. Torah is here to illuminate our lives. So look what he writes, paragraph C. Ve'es zos anu osim ayitei ha'ala'os ha'neiros b'menorah. So says Rav Ariel something amazing. What the Aron represents is this idea that Torah is min hashamayim. Torah comes from God. Remember, one of the fundamental theological underpinnings of our faith is that Torah is divine. Torah comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Torah shebichsav, Torah shebal peh. All the basic tenets of our faith come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is represented in the Aron. Because remember again, you have the Ark, the Word of God emanates from the Kruvim that's right on top of the Ark. It's almost like the Torah is the very spiritual battery for the Beis HaMikdash. There's no Judaism, ultimately, without Torah. But what's the danger? The danger is, where's the Aron? Kodesh HaKadosh, Holy of Holies. Who gets to go into the Holy of Holies? Going over how many times? One time throughout the year. So what do I do with that? So very nice. Now you're telling me that my very lifeblood is contained within a golden ark, from which the voice of God emanates, that is obscured by a curtain, that I dare not pass. that I dare not pull back and go through under the penalty of death. Says Rav Ariel, with that type of mindset, people could think that Torah, oh, I love Torah. I love Torah. Torah is wonderful. I respect it. I add it. But what do I do with it with my life? Not all that much, because it's in the arms in the Kodesh HaKadosh. The Ever says Rav Ariel something so beautiful. Look at, I'm in paragraph C. HaMenorah nimseis amna michutz l'paroches. Where was the Aron? The Aron was outside, where was the menorah? The menorah was outside of the curtain. Karov yosra the olam ha'asiya. The menorah is not in the Holy of Holies. The menorah is in the Kodesh. The menorah, remember, if you looked into the Mishkan, you'd be able to see the menorah. You couldn't see the ark because the ark was obscured by the curtain. But when you looked in, you were able to see the menorah. Ulam zebidyuk Yehuda. Anachnu tzrichim lahalos esha'ar. Anachnu tzrichim lilmold ulelameid. Lishmar v'lasos l'kayim. I know, so something so beautiful over here. He says, it's not a utensil redundancy to have two utensils representing Torah. They each represent two different things. The arm represents the beauty of Torah, the divine authenticity of Torah, the fact that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what does the menorah represent? Remember, it's interesting. The menorah, there are so many miracles in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. Interestingly enough, one of the miracles that happened was on the Mizbeach, was on the outer altar. What happened on the outer altar? The Jewish people would bring an animal sacrifice, and what would happen? A fire would come down from Shamayim and would immediately consume the carbon. Where didn't that miracle occur? Why, what utensil? By the menorah, right? So meaning God, you know, im kvar as kvar, if you're already bringing down a fire on the Mizbeach, so why don't you do us all a favor, just bring down a fire on the menorah as well and illuminate the wicks. What's the answer, Rav Ariel? That menorah represents the idea that if you want Torah to illuminate your life, you must take positive, dynamic action. If you want Torah to light up your existence, if you want to be a spiritual being, if you want to grow, if you want to be close to God, you can't wait for the fire to come down to you. You have to ascend the steps like Aaron HaKohen did, and you have to kindle those candles. You have to kindle those wicks yourself. So whereas the Aron represents the divinity of Torah, whereas the Aron represents the Mesorah, whereas the Aron represents the sanctity of Torah, the Aron represents the idea that if you want Torah in your life, if you want spirituality, you have to be ready to work. You have to be ready to labor. You have to be ready to ascend the stairs and kindle those wicks on your own. This is one of the greatest challenges of our generation, because we all want spirituality. But what don't we want? We don't want to work. Which is, interestingly enough, why, if you ever notice, why there's such a proliferation of Kabbalah centers. Again, I'm a big fan of Kabbalah centers. But what's the draw of Kabbalah? Nobody understands it. I mean, there are people who understand that, not people going to the Kabbalah center. What's the big draw? What's the big draw? Because what does Kabbalah offer to the layman? What is it? A quick fix. A quick fix. We are the instant gratification generation. I want everything, and I want it now. I don't want 3G, I want 4G. Right? And I don't want to email, I'm going to text. We want everything now. We want it quickly, we want it done. We want it with our material lives, and we want it with our spiritual lives also. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, it might work with your cell phone, but it's not going to work with your ruchnius. If you want to be a spiritual being, if you want to be holy, if you want a relationship, you have to be ready to kindle the lights yourself. You have to be ready to ascend the stairs. Don't wait for the fire to come down from heaven. Make the fire yourself. So why? What do we do? So beautiful idea of Ariel. What does that do with our question? So perhaps you could apply it like this. Perhaps, you know, when you read last week's parasha, you read Parshas Truma, and what happens? You read all about the construction of the Mishkan. And remember, what's the major phrase? V'asuli mikdash v'shachanti b'socham. So you could easily walk away from that commandment and think, what's my obligation? Let me build the structure. And what happens after I build the structure? What do I need to do?
Nothing.
I did my part. No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes along in the beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh. And what does he place here? V'ata titzaveh es b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu eilecha shemen zayis zach. Why? L'ma'or. La'alos ner tamid. Therefore, based on what Rav Ariel is saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes along and says, one second, Don't think for a moment that you discharge your obligation for becoming a spiritual being by building a building. Buildings are very nice, but you know how buildings become holy? Buildings only become holy one way, through the beautiful, dynamic spiritual activity that occurs within their walls. There is no such thing as a building that is inherently holy. Buildings are made up of wood, of stone, of metals, but they're not holy. It's the dynamic activity that takes place within that creates the holiness. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu purposely leaves the Shem Olam Ha'or, purposely leaves the fuel for the menorah separate. Let's go through the details of the construction of the Mishkan, but lest you think that that's your only obligation, build the building and sit back and wait for the fire to come down. The Torah says, V'ikhu elecha shemen zayis zav. Remind the people they have to bring the oil. Why? La'alos ner tamid. You want spirituality? Yes, building a Mishkan is a wonderful start. But if you really want real spirituality in life, you have to kindle the fire yourself. You have to work. You have to make it happen. You have to ascend the steps. And you must create your spiritual facts on the ground. That's our third approach. Take a look at number five. Comes along the Alshech. And the Alshech says something very beautiful as well. He writes, now, he actually, well, let's look at number five. He says the following. Vizos tia kavana saksuvim. Vahu kihine, he's such an interesting insight. Vahu kihine, ein sofek, ki achari ra'os Moshe eskol ma'aseh ha-mishkan, ki no rahu la'asos lo mishkan lishkol la'ashem besochek. V'yitzabe es amo v'yikhu li truma. So remember, so the Alshech says, let's put ourselves for a moment in the shoes of Moshe Rabbeinu. So what does he see happening? Last week's parasha, he put out the call, v'yikhu li truma. He puts out the call to go ahead and bring materials. And what happens? And everybody responds beautifully. Remember, again, we don't get to this until a couple of parashas, but remember, again, something amazing happened by this collection, which was what? Right? There was too much. Moshe Rabbeinu literally had to tell the people, stop bringing more things. Unheard of in a Jewish fundraising initiative. Right? To tell people to stop bringing. But so Moshe Rabbeinu sees on one hand, the Jewish people are contributing so beautifully by giving all of the materials. So that's in one direction. Then he looks over, what does he see? Ve'el betzalel va'aliyah v'chol ish chacham leiv la'asos aron minora v'shulchan v'chol klei ha'mishkan v'alu machzeu. And on the other hand, what does he see? He sees all the craftsmen. He sees Bitzalel and Aliyav and Ahaliyav and all the other men who and women who volunteered, who volunteered their services, and they're actively involved in fabricating the utensils, the structure, the clothing, the curtains. And then what else does he see? Ves Aaron ves Barav lechayim lefanav yisparach. And then what else does he see? He sees that his brother Aaron and Aaron's sons have been chosen to be Kohanim. So says the Alshech, so imagine for a second. So Moshe Rabbeinu looks one direction, Klal Yisrael is giving all the materials. Other direction, Bitzalel, Aliyav, and others are the actual craftsmen. Another direction, Aaron and his sons have just been marked for Kohanic greatness. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, the Alshech begins to say, Halo Yischamit Levavo Lemar, Mazos Asa Elokim Li, Ki Ein Li Chelik B'davar HaGadol Hazeh. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, the Alshech begins to lament himself, Where's my part? Right? I'm not part of the donations. I'm not a craftsman. I'm not a Kohen. Where's my role in all of this? Uma gam ki hu haya ase lios Kohen v'aron levi v'nechlof hadavar b'shlichos Mitzrayim. So this Alshech, as in another piece over here, which is it could be that the pain is compounded by the fact that what? Moshe Rabbeinu and his offspring were supposed to be the Kohanim. So Aaron was supposed to be the Levi. So when did everything switch? So the Medrash brings down that at a certain point in time when Moshe Rabbeinu keeps giving God a hard time by the sneh, by the burning bush, and he finally says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shlach no biatishlach, just send this agency, send the one who you normally send, which is a reference to Aaron. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets a little bit angry at Moshe Rabbeinu for constantly trying to shirk his divinely ordained responsibility. And part of the fallout from Moshe Rabbeinu's continued obstinance was he forfeited the right of the kahuna. So now all the more so, Aaron is being commissioned right in front of his eyes. And Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who actually has to commission him. So says the Alshech, Moshe Rabbeinu feels fundamentally left out. So look at number six. So the Alshech says something so beautiful. He says, Uma gam b'ta'am sha'amilas va'ato ki magbiya kol va'omer va'ato Moshe. Al tochush. So Al-Shik says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Moshe, don't be sad. Don't be upset. Ki chelkicha gadol mikulam. Your portion is greater than all of them. Why? Ki halo shlemus kulam al yadcho. Because God says to Moshe, Rabbeinu, Moshe, you have to understand something. Their completion, their ability to do their parts, only comes through you. Ki al yidei masha ata titzave es b'nei Yisrael. Because it's only through what you command to the Jewish people. B'chol mitzvos, v'gab masha v'yikhu elecha shemen, yizaku sh'al yidei kein yoyil laha'alos ner tamid. So the Ashik says something so beautiful over here. The Ashik says that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to tell Moshe Rabbeinu is, Moshe, you're not left out. Instead, what are you? Moshe, you are an enabler. You are the person who enables other people to become great. You know, in life, there are two different types of people. There are some people who accomplish incredible things on their own, do magnificent feats, magnificent accomplishments, but they don't necessarily have an impact on the world around them. And there are other people who themselves may not always be in the spotlight, the center stage in the limelight, but yet what? They are the enablers. They are the people behind the scenes that allow others to do great things. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Moshe, you know, there were times where you were center stage, but now I have a different role for you. Your role now is not to be in the spotlight. Your role is to be an enabler. Your role is to enable the people to become great. Your role is to enable your brother and his sons to become great. And the Al-Shik suggests that that is contained in the very opening pasuk in this week's parasha. Va'ata! Now, va'ata is a strange way to go ahead and open the parasha. What do you mean, va'ata, and you? Why don't you just say, ata titzaveh? What do you mean, va'ata? The Al-Shik explains that what's happening over here is God is responding to Moshe Rabbeinu's sadness. Moshe Rabbeinu is despondent. Why? Why? Because he feels left out. So what does God say to him? V'ata titzaveh es b'nei Yisrael. Moshe, v'ata, you are just as important, if not more important than all the players, because you are the one who commands the Jewish people. V'yikhu elecha shemen zayis zoch. Because he's, you know what's amazing? Now, when you see the fire burning, so what catches everybody's eye? The flame. What do people generally not pay all that much attention to? The oil. But yet, it's the oil that allows the fire to burn. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, V'ata titzaveh es b'nei Yisrael, don't be despondent. V'yikhu elecha shemen zayis zach. You, Moshe, are the shemen. You are the oil. You are the fuel that makes everything happen. You are the enabler that allows everyone else to do their part. Laha'alos ner tamid. It is only because of you, Moshe, that the fire of Klal Yisrael burns so bright. The Al-Shech goes on. He says, Kimoshi yisbar lahayir lahem la'olam haba, ach biladecha lo hayizochen l'kach. Without you, Moshe, the people would be able to accomplish very little. Zeu ha'klalos ha'klalos Yisrael. U'mashe tikane al-aron u'banav shim kohanav lo'ata. So Moshe, so now at least you know, the people only shine, why? The people only burn bright, why? Because you are their oil. What about Aaron? So the fact that Aaron becomes a Kohen and not you. Gam shlemosam shlemusam mimchavi. Their completeness, their greatness is from you. V'ata hakriv elecha es Aaron. Va'al yidei hakriv elecha yizaku. So this is so beautiful. So if we look down at number 7, immediately after the Torah discusses the mitzvah of the shemen, of the oil, the Torah begins the mitzvah of consecration of the kohanim. What does the Torah say? V'ata, now you, again, same lashon, v'ata Moshe, don't be despondent. Hakriv elecha es Aaron achicha. The only way for Aaron to be an Aaron is how? Hakriv elecha. Is because of your influence on him. Without your influence, Moshe, Aaron will never be able to be the Kohen Gadol. So according to the Al-Sheikh, what's coming out so beautifully over here is, and now we understand the placement as well, because the placement of the shemen is perfectly in the middle of two dramatic things, both of which cause Moshe Rabbeinu an incredible amount of heartache. Right? The shemen is preceded by Parshas Truma, which discusses the incredible generosity, incredible nedivos lev of the people. They're giving everything in order to go ahead and build the Mishkan. And Moshe Rabbeinu is not. And right after that is Aaron being inducted and consecrated as the Kohen Gadol and the sons of the Kohanim. And in the middle is Moshe Rabbeinu feeling all despondent that I'm all left out. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, V'ata, Moshe, you are so important. You are so incredibly important. You are the shemen, you are the oil that allows the light of Klal Yisrael to burn. V'ata hakrev elechas Aaron achicha. Ultimately, you are the one. You are the one, Moshe, only because of Aaron's relationship with you does he have the ability to blossom into the great Kohen Gadol that he has the capacity to be. So Moshe, you may not be center stage. You may not be in the spotlight, but Moshe, you are the enabler. You are the catalyst for everyone else's growth. So the incredible placement of the Shemen over here, seemingly in the middle of nowhere, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu teaching us such a profound lesson that sometimes it's not just about what you accomplish as an individual, but it's what you enable others to accomplish as well. You know, sometimes we become so fixated on what I need to do. I need to do this. I need to do that. You know, sometimes the greatest bracha you can have in life is building someone else up so that they feel empowered to accomplish. Now, do you get all the credit? No. Do you get the spotlight? Do you get the covet? Do you get to put another notch on your belt for what you accomplished? No. But you know, there's a beautiful nitziv. The nitziv says that Avraham Avinu's greatest accomplishment is the fact that he impacted others. Now, what's interesting over here is I would have said Avraham Avinu's greatest accomplishment is he had 10 tests. He passed all of the tests, right? Or he was willing to sacrifice his son. No, he impacted other people. That was his greatest accomplishment. And the Nitziv explains something so beautiful, something so basic, but yet so profound. The Nitziv says, you know, if your life is only about you and only about your accomplishments, then the truth is you can only reap the benefits for your own actions. But if you inspire others and you build others up and you ultimately illuminate others and you serve as the catalyst for others' growth, then guess what? When they're successful, you know what happens? You get to share in their success as well. So says the Nitziv, the greatness of Avraham Avinu is not just what he did for himself, because the impact of those acts are limited. It was the fact that Avraham Avinu spent a lifetime trying to inspire others, so that whenever those individuals would do great things, and they would in turn inspire their children and their children after them, all of that credit would accrue to Avraham Avinu because he was the catalyst for their growth. And says the Al-Sheikh, that's the message that's being taught to us here. Yes, we have to focus on our accomplishments because life is all about accomplishments. We're supposed to go ahead and try to accomplish incredible and great things. But just as important as trying to accomplish for ourselves is what? Is making sure that we enable others to become great as well. Is making sure that we serve as the shemen that allows others to be kindled and to illuminate. It's not just looking out for what I can do, but it's looking out for how I can help build up the other. And finally, our last approach. And then we won't link them all together. We'll just bring them in all together. Look at the Malbim number 8. Here the Malbim says something very dramatic as well. The Malbim writes, V'ato titzaveh. So the Malbim writes, V'lo nishar lanu rak ladas. Now the Malbim, interestingly enough, is, well, let's read it. V'lo nishar lanu rak ladas. Lama hifsik. B'tzivui zeh. Bein ma'aseh ha-mishkan v'kelov. U'bein ma'aseh bigdei kuhuna. Ki'ilu hu'ak doma l'meleches ha-begadim. V'kod mosaleyem. So, what the Malbim is bothered by is the following. The Malbim says is, he looks a little bit differently. You see, we were trying to figure out why wasn't the oil included in the beginning of Parshas Truma. What he's a little bit more focused on is, it's almost the way the Parsha is set up, it almost looks like the Torah is using the psukim about the oil to serve as an introduction for the discussion about Kohanic clothing. So how is it that oil represents an introduction to the discussion of Kohanic clothing? So look what he says, and this is really a profound insight. He says, "B'chin wa'emes." The truth is, the oil is an introduction to the Kohanic clothing. How so? She'lefi ma she'nevayer, she'ikar tzivoy levishas ha'begadim ha'mukdashim. Now remember, there's a lot of discussion. We actually spoke about this a couple of years ago. There's a lot of discussion about the Bigdei Kohuna, right? Why do the Kohanim need such specific types of clothing? What's the message in the clothing? So the Malbim says that there's a very important message that's being dispatched through the clothing. And what's that? Yirmos, al taras hamidos v'hadeos, shehem bigdei hanefesh. So he says something very beautiful. The Malbim writes that you know what the message of the clothing is? That just like you require special clothing to clothe your body when you're serving God, so too a person needs clothing also represents midos, represents character traits, represents deos, mindset. These are the big day ha-nefesh. So just as there's big day ha-guf, there's clothing for the body, there's also big day ha-nefesh, there's clothing for the soul. And bless you. And just like the clothing for the body is specific, is unique, is custom tailored, so too one has to make sure that they're wearing the right clothing for their soul. That I'm clothed, my soul is clothed with the right midos. This is very important because remember, what happens if a kohen does the avodah, does sacrificial service, temple service, without the big day kahuna? What happens? He's chayiv misa. That's chayiv misa. There's a death penalty for that. Again, why? Because just like when you serve in the Beis HaMikdash, you need the right physical attire. In order to truly serve God, you need the right spiritual attire as well. I need the correct bigdei hanefesh. Tzarech letzarif eleha es Hashem en HaKadosh, kimo shekasov, b'chol eisiyu begadecha levanim. At all times, shai your clothing, b'vayitza shalom melech in goeles. V'shemen al roshecha al yechzar. And there should never be a lack of oil on your head. Sherot Zalman, what does this mean? Shebigdei hanefesh, sheheim midoseo tchunoseo, Yihyu levanim mikol chala b'shimtza. Now this is very interesting. So the Malbim understands this pasuk. Is what does it mean b'chol esu b'gadecha levanim? That your clothing should be white at all times. Now Shalom Aleich is obviously not referring to my physical clothing. What is he referring to? Says the Malbim, my spiritual clothing. And what's my spiritual clothing? My midos. My midos. Shalom Aleich says, make sure your midos are in order. You know, it's interesting because sometimes what we focus on is make sure your observance is in order. Now, making sure your observance is in order is very important also. But just as important as making sure your observance is in order is making sure your midos are in order. What kind of clothing is your neshama wearing? Is my neshama wearing the right midos? And by the way, this is a much bigger, we can make a whole shir out of this, because sometimes people choose midos that are not right for them. Right? Knowing what midos to choose and what midos not to choose, knowing what to amplify and what to decrease, knowing what to focus on and kind of what to move away from, these are very difficult questions that we contend with all of the time. You have to make sure your soul is wearing the right clothing. V'shemen al yechzar me'al rosho. Similarly, the oil should never be deficient. What's the oil? V'zeh kimo shekasov. Listen to this. HaTorah v'ha'adam chiburam Huner Elokim Baaretz. Hatori Hilav, Misparid, Meshaviv, Hayosheba Shemaim, Va'adam Bishne Chalakov Avuka, Avuka Shoeves Oro, Govo Psila Nifkeles, Nishmaso Shemen Zayis Zach. So the Balaam gives a very beautiful image over here. And what's the image? The image is Torah is fire. Torah is fire. And you know, you need fire to create fire. And the Balaam says that the body of man is considered to be the wick, and the neshama of man is considered to be the shemen, is the oil. So life is all about somehow creating a harmony between the wick of physicality and the oil of spirituality, in order that what? I can be illuminated through the fire of, with the fire of Torah. Nishmaso shemen zayizach, bahaskamasam, vatzmadam, Yismali habayis kula ora. If the body does what it's supposed to do, and the neshama does what it's supposed to do, wick and oil come together, then what? Then they can be illuminated by the fire of Torah. He says, Ba'amnam, lo kol adam zoche la hashemen hazach, hamuchan lahadlik bo oraloki lahayir ober mikdasho. But you know what the problem is, says the Malbim? The Malbim says, sometimes the oil is not shemen zayis zach. Sometimes the oil of the neshama is not pure oil. Sometimes there's shmarim. Sometimes there, I don't know what the dregs, that's the right word? Dregs, sediment. Sometimes the oil is not pure. If the oil is not pure, it can't burn clearly. He goes on. He says, Sometimes the soul is not refined enough to be able to reflect the light of the Shekhinah. Or sometimes the body is not refined enough. Remember again, in order for a wick to burn, it has to be a certain kind of wick. Sometimes the body is not refined enough, and therefore, again, the oil could be ready to burn, but the body is not capable of ultimately generating the light. So what's the so the Mishkan says the Malbim was ultimately to be a tziur, an image of achdus, of unity. When the people came into the Mishkan, they were united as one person. And what was the whole idea of the Mishkan? The idea of the Mishkan was to draw down the presence of God into the physical world. Tziva el haguf haklali shem klal Yisrael. Sheyaviu el Moshe shemen zayis zach. Shu yitar nishmasam ukidushasa shiye mucham lama'or. Va'az. So says the Malbim something absolutely amazing. The Malbim says, you know what's happening over here? In last week's parasha, we read about the construction of the physical Mishkan. Beautiful. But again, like we said before, the danger of last week's parasha is what? Then one could think that as soon as you construct the physical edifice of the Mishkan, mission accomplished. Not true. What's the next step? The Mishkan is only the edifice. What do you have to do now? Va'ata titzaves b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu elecha shemen zayis zach. So what happens? So Malbim says, Klal Yisrael, you have to bring your Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to instruct the people, tell them to bring their shemen to you. What's their shemen? Their shemen is their neshama, is their soul. Tell the people they need to come to you. Why? Because they have shemen. They have beautiful oil. But you know what happens with the oil over time? Right? So there's dregs, there's schmutz, there's sediment, there's all this stuff. Tell them to bring their shemen to you. Why? Kasis. Kasis means what? You're going to have to crush it a little bit. Not in a literal sense, but you're going to have to refine it. Tell them to come to you, and your job is to lift them up. Your job is to refine them. And if you do what? Lama'or. If you do that, then you know what? By lifting up, by purifying their shemen, you will also purify their guf. Therefore, the oil is pure, the wick is pure, and what happens? It's ready to be illuminated by the light of Torah. And what's the very next section? The very next section is Va'ata Hakrev Elechas Aron Achicha. It's about what? It's about begadim. And what does that mean? What do begadim represent? What do clothing represent according to the Malbim? Midos, character traits. Lest you think that it's enough to have a pure soul. Lest you think that it's enough to go ahead and have a body that's a wick, that is conducive, or that is able to conduct the light. It's not enough. Va'ata hakrev elechas aron achicha. And what happens? Va'asisa bigdei kodesh. You have to have the right midos in life as well. You have to be a mensch. You have to know how to treat people. You have to know how to act. You have to be honest. You have to be kind. You have to be empathic. You have to be loving. You have to be compassionate. You need the bigdei kodesh as well. So according to the Malbim, what's unfolding over here is from this little section that looks so out of place, the Torah is giving us such an incredible lesson. Don't for a second think that building a structure is the be-all, end-all in the service of God. Don't for a second think that all you need to do is construct an edifice, Shalom Yisrael, you're ready to go. Not true at all. The Mishkan is a vehicle for personal refinement. But what are the steps to refining myself as an individual? And the answer is three answers. Three parts. Number one, Va'ata titzaves b'nei Yisrael, v'ikhu elecha shemen zayis zach. Number one, I have to refine my soul. I have to take the spiritual oil that I have, the soulful oil, and I have to remove the impurities. I have to remove the sediment. I have to remove the dregs. Not only that, what else do I have to do? In order for the oil to burn, it needs what? It needs a wick. And therefore, what's the wick? The wick is my body. I have to make sure that my physical life is pure, that my physical life, my material life, is pure and holy as well. So I have to refine the oil of my soul. I have to make sure, I have to refine the wick of my physical material life. But lest you think that's not enough. Oh no, lest you think that's enough. It's not enough. The asisa bigdei kodesh. Jew has to have the full package. The pure oil of the soul, the pure wick of the body, and good midos. and good character traits. I have my soul, that soul that's filled with beautiful, pure oil, has to be clothed by the right kind of life attributes, the right kind of life characteristics, the right kind of midos. So that was our fifth verse. So now, if we bring this all together, what we learn is, again, like I said, not trying to tie a common theme, but what comes out is really three powerful and profound lessons that are learned out from this simple, and remember again, this is just two psukim in our entire Torah. And yet, amazing enough, we emerge with three major life lessons. Lesson number one is that if you want spirituality in life, you have to be willing to work. You have to be willing to shvitz. You have to be willing to put in the effort. You have to ascend the steps, and you have to light your own menorah. Don't wait for the Aron to come to you, because the Aron is not coming to you. The Aron is remaining behind the curtain in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Lesson number one is, if you want holiness in life, you have to struggle, you have to strive, you have to work, you have to ascend, and most importantly, you must kindle your own lights. Lesson number two, that was Rav Ariel. Lesson number two was the lesson of the Alshich, that sometimes in life, it's not just important to focus on what you do for yourself, but what you do for others. And in this context, we're not referring to chesed, we're not referring to doing kindness for others, we're referring to the beautiful opportunity we each have, whether it's with our family or with our friends, or both, to be able to lift people up. You know, it is so easy, unfortunately, it's so easy to deconstruct a person, but it's just as easy and much more pleasant to build a person up. A kind word, a phrase of chizuk, a compliment, just some type of positive encouragement makes such a difference in the life of the individual. You know, all of us struggle. Some of us struggle with big things, some of us struggle with small things, but there's one thing we all love. We all love a word of positive encouragement from someone else. Moshe Rabbeinu, you're so upset that you're left out of the donations, you're left out of the kahuna, you're left out of the constructions, you have the greatest schus, and that's the schus of being an enabler. Lesson number two is, maybe we focus a little bit less, or maybe we don't only focus on what we do for ourselves, but we begin to place an incredible focus and emphasis on how we could enable others to grow. And finally, lesson number three, which was the Malbim, the beautiful lesson of the Malbim, where ultimately Torah is teaching us in this simple two psukim over here, followed by the Big Day Kahuna, the three steps for impactful, positive, meaningful, and successful spiritual living. Number one, I have to refine my soul. The oil has to be pure. Number two, I have to refine my body. The wick has to be pure. But in order for the wick of physicality to combine with the oil of spirituality to burn bright in the light of the Torah, va'asisa bigdei kodesh, I have to be clothed by the right kind of midos. I have to be clothed, ultimately, by the right kind of character traits. So what comes out is something so beautiful, that although the Mishkan was something that was a once in a history thing, we'll never again have a Mishkan. Halavai will have a third Beis HaMikdash, Amir Tashem Hira B'Yameinu, but we're never going to have another Mishkan. But despite the fact that the structure itself was temporary and served our needs for a relatively brief amount of time, we clearly see that its magnificent and beautiful lessons are eternal. All right, we'll stop over here. Just to announce, there's not going to be shir for the next couple of weeks. This shir, as well as the Monday night shir, will Amir Tashem resume the first week in March, right before. We'll be doing a two-part series on Purim, so you'll just watch the email. If you're not on the email list for this year, there should be a form. Is there a form attached to the back? Yeah. There should be a form. You can just fill it out, put your email address on there. You can leave it with me over here. That way you'll get all the emails from the shir.
Thank you.
The 9 o'clock Marav in the basement.
9 o'clock Marav, whoever needs it.